Barnwell. In a minute, Danny Heifetz of The Ringer is going to join me to talk about the teams who are down bad, the teams who are furthest from Super Bowl contention, furthest from relevance, furthest from the glory of the NFL postseason. We're going to talk about the worst teams in football and how far away they are. We're going to rank them 1 to 5. Some interesting choices from Danny, a team I don't think anyone has in their top five, at the bottom of the top five for me. But before we get to that, a team that is not mentioned in that conversation is a team I want to talk about when it comes to their offensive infrastructure and some of the choices they made and are now being blamed for their struggles. And that is our old friends, the New York Jets, who it felt like until Monday were in a good place. They were 4-3 after playing an extremely difficult schedule. They obviously have not been great on offense without Aaron Rodgers, who's been out for the year, but they had been solid enough to win games. They were on a winning streak. They beat the Broncos. They beat the Eagles in an upset, and then they beat the Giants in a game where, unfortunately, somebody had to win, and the Jets pulled out a miracle at the very end of the contest. We are now at a point after the Chargers game where criticism is coming in, and I'm going to say that is deserved, because people who are blaming this season not living up to expectations, which I don't think it will, on the Aaron Rodgers injury have a point. Losing Aaron Rodgers, your starting quarterback in week one, in the opening drive of week one, it's going to hurt your chances of winning, no question. But even if they had Aaron Rodgers at quarterback, this is not the Super Bowl caliber roster that the Jets were hoping for. And I'm going to leave the defense aside. They're playing very well. They're sixth in the NFL in EPA per play after the last couple of weeks. I'm not going to say they're the 85 Bears, as the defense has suggested. They're below teams like the Jaguars. I think they're tied with the Falcons for defensive EPA per play, which is good. They're a good defense, no question. But they have to be incredible, spectacular, multiple interceptions, and probably a defensive touchdown to pull out wins for this offense. And that is not strictly having Aaron Rodgers on the sidelines. That is the infrastructure around Aaron Rodgers, which was bad the moment week one started. Let's review. The Jets hired Nathaniel Hackett as their offensive coordinator. Nathaniel Hackett had not been a good coordinator at any level outside of 3 years with the Packers, where he was not calling the plays. That was Matt LaFleur, and Aaron Rodgers was the quarterback. Remember, in the few plays Aaron Rodgers ran this year, they cut defensive linemen twice with cut blocks to throw quick game, which Aaron Rodgers, after the fact, it was reported Aaron Rodgers does not like running quick game and having offensive linemen cut to get the ball out quickly. He, in fact, took the season-ending sack that tore his Achilles on a play where Garrett Wilson was open on quick game after his offensive lineman cut, and Aaron Rodgers did not get rid of the football because he wanted to find a better solution. So, not great that your offensive coordinator, who you hired solely to mesh with Aaron Rodgers, called two of the first four pass plays of the season and had Aaron Rodgers be not particularly fond of those plays, but certainly have not seen very much in the post-Aaron Rodgers era and in the Nathaniel Hackett's career outside of working with Aaron Rodgers to make me believe that he is a NFL caliber offensive coordinator. We saw plenty of that in the loss to the Chargers. This is a team that has one very talented wide receiver in Garrett Wilson and not much else at receiver. We're giving plenty of snaps to Alan Lazard, who had a pass hit him in the helmet for a drop, I believe, on Monday night. He's had several drops this year, has been very inconsistent. Randall Cobb was playing regularly to start the year. Again, his primary NFL skill at this point is being friends with Aaron Rodgers. He's become a healthy scratch. With either of those players on the field last year, the Packers were 23 points of QBR worse when Aaron Rodgers was in the lineup. So when Aaron Rodgers had neither Alan Lazard or Randall Cobb on the field, he was 23 points of QBR better than when he had one or both in the lineup instead. They are not... I guess Alan Lazard is an NFL caliber receiver, but Randall Cobb is not. Alan Lazard probably stretched as a two, making more than $10 million per year. They have Breece Hall, who is a super exciting running back, but a guy coming off of a torn ACL. Tough to see him being a 20 carry a game guy. I can't fault them for bringing in Dalvin Cook. It hasn't worked. Dalvin Cook's been terrible, but you know, it wasn't like Dalvin Cook was a star running back last year either. So offensive infrastructure in terms of playmakers, not great. And then you get to the offensive line, a group that Jets fans this summer were treating Duane Brown as if he was the second coming of Anthony Munoz or Joe Thomas. Duane Brown was a very good player. He's in his late 30s, was coming off of an injury, and is hurt again. Mekhi Becton was a player who had played one game over the prior two seasons, and he was going to have to move from left tackle to right tackle. He's been relatively healthy this year, which is kind of shocking. Elijah Vera Tucker, a player Jets fans have treated as the next coming of Alan Faneca, or, you know, insert your incredible guard here. He's a good player, but also coming back from an injury and unfortunately tore his Achilles. I don't think the Jets could have anticipated that he was going to tear his Achilles this year. So that part, not ideal. Maybe you couldn't have anticipated that, but sometimes stuff goes wrong and the Jets have not had the depth you would have hoped for along their offensive line to deal with the injuries, the stuff that happens to these linemen week after week. Connor McGovern, a player who they cut his salary and brought him back to play center, was not very good before he got hurt. Joe Tippmann, their second round pick, has not been ready to play at a high level. You know, this is not a team that has a great offensive line. So picture all of that with Aaron Rodgers, a quarterback. Of course he makes some of those situations better, but it's still Aaron Rodgers with one good receiver behind a injury-riddled, mediocre offensive line. That's not a good combination. That's not a combination that has Super Bowl aspirations, especially when it's not the Aaron Rodgers who won back-to-back MVPs, but the Aaron Rodgers coming off of a mediocre season last year who is 39 years old. Aaron Rodgers is still a good player. I think he would have been better than he was by QBR a year ago, but the reality is, unless you're Tom Brady, it is very dangerous and very difficult to be a elite NFL quarterback this late into your 30s. I guess Drew Brees would be an example as well, but I think we're kind of spoiled by Brady and Brees. I think that expectation of those guys continue to play at a high level until their absolute very end, I think that was probably a little generous relative to our expectations for Aaron Rodgers. So I think the formula, I think the blueprint for this Jets team was flawed from day one, and that's something they're going to have to address this offseason. They cannot run it back with the same infrastructure, the same offensive core, and hope to get results just because Rodgers is returning. They have to make a change at OC. Nathaniel Hackett is not able to do this at a high level. They have to bring in a legitimate number two receiver. If they trade for Davante Adams, they're probably going to have to give up more draft capital that they don't have in terms of the future. But I would understand it. I wouldn't fault them for bringing in Davante Adams. I think that would make total sense. If you're going to bring in people who are friends with Aaron Rodgers, at least have them be good at football, or at least have them be, you know, super talented players. I understand being all in for a Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers next year, so I think that makes sense. But they're going to have to make changes. You cannot come into 2024 with Aaron Rodgers expecting that just having a 40-year-old quarterback and a great defense is going to win you a Super Bowl. Tom Brady in Tampa needed more. Once his offensive line started crumbling, we saw Brady struggle. Once the running game wasn't there for Brady, we saw him struggle his final season. You can't do that with Aaron Rodgers and expect to win a Super Bowl. And for the Jets, when you trade for Aaron Rodgers, you can't expect anything less. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jets Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better with the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country. There is no competition. And right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a Jets Pizza location near you. Again, try Jets Signature 8-Corner Pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jets Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I've ranted about the Jets enough. Now, here, as promised, one of my favorite people. Just a delightful human being. a bundle of joy, which is why today I'm bringing him on to talk about the NFL teams that are messy, that are trash, that are down bad. Joining me to do that is my old pal from The Ringer, Denny Heifetz. Has anyone ever called you the Great White Heif before?
The Great White Heif? No, that you would definitely be the first.
Okay. I mean, I'm throwing that out there. I feel like you have a very nicknameable name, Danny.
I appreciate that. I've gotten DH a lot, which I didn't mind.
I do like that.
The Great White Heif, I'm not going to lie. I don't know. I feel like that makes my skin crawl a little.
that's the appropriate reaction you want for a nickname. You don't want the other person to like it that much. Like it a little bit. Be a little nervous about it. Danny, it's a blast to have you on the show. Very excited to talk to you again. And we have a topic I feel like is very relevant right now because this has been a weird year. There are some teams with pretty good records who kind of stink. There are some teams with some pretty stinky records who are kind of okay. I want to get past what we've seen so far this year and think about the big picture and think about where these teams lie for the future. So what we're going to do is break down from both of our perspectives, the five teams who are, how can we put this? Maybe the furthest away from winning a Super Bowl. Is that fair? Is that how you put together your list?
I was somewhere between Super Bowl versus the general concept of hope. Yeah. Those were kind of the two things I was competing with because sometimes Super Bowl feels very narrow and frankly unobtainable. But like hope and positivity is easier to delude yourself into thinking is real.
Sure. So what was the Batman movie where Batman's stuck in a well for like and he has to fight his way out?
Oh, the Dark Knight Rises?
Yeah.
The third one.
Yeah. So like that, the team that's stuck in the well.
The well, like when he was a kid, or the big well that was a prison for all the other people where he broke his back?
The big well that was a prison. Center. People are so mad at me for not knowing the terms of the third Batman movie. The well where he was an adult. He was imprisoned as an adult.
Yeah. Sorry, you were just molded by the dark. We were all born in it. It's fine.
That's fair. Thank you. So we're going to go through our five teams here who are furthest from hope, furthest from the Super Bowl, furthest from relevance. You fill in your term here. I feel like they all fit. Danny, of course, you are the guest. So please start us with your team. Do you want to start with the worst team? I think that makes the most sense.
I agree. I think it makes sense to start with the worst. You want me to go first or you
please,
want to go first?
I want you to go first.
Okay. So as I was just saying, I think it's easier to delude yourself. And so I started the first team I wrote down when you first asked me to do this was the Giants. I then changed my answer.
No.
And I'm putting the Patriots first.
Oh, no.
I'm putting the Patriots as the most down bad team. And here's the short answer. I feel like they're the clear top tier. Like Giants, Patriots, it's almost like you have to talk about them together. But they both have this terrible quarterback situation where, frankly, like they're just going to be competing down the rest of the season and just hope the draft slot fixes the quarterback situation for them. They don't have much blue chip talent. The Patriots probably have more good players, which isn't many, but the Giants basically have Andrew Thomas and Dexter Lawrence, and that's kind of it in terms of players that should definitely be on the team in 2025. The difference to me is that I still believe in Brian Daboll as the head coach, and I still believe in Joe Shane as the GM. And what I don't like about the Patriots situation is they have this terrible situation of letting Bill Belichick stay in charge. We're just having to find someone to replace Bill Belichick. And the dual pronged thing is what I couldn't get over of having to both find a quarterback and find a replacement for the greatest coach of my lifetime. But also they still really need to replace Tom Brady. And that just seems super daunting to me.
I'm just going to throw Kayvon Thibodeau out there as one of the Giants who should be on the roster. Just so Giants fans don't yell at us.
I think the other reason, it sounds like you picked the Giants. What I kept thinking about was not only do I believe in the Giants staff, which even if you don't, I think those three players, Thibodeau, Lawrence, and Thomas, are like better than almost anyone the Patriots have. I mean, Christian Gonzalez, you can throw out there, the other Christian Barmore. But outside of the two Christians, man, I don't know. So why did you pick the Giants over the Patriots?
I didn't pick the Giants or the Patriots at number one, Danny.
Wow, what?
I picked the Carolina Panthers at number one.
Okay.
Let's talk about the Patriots and the Giants to start here. So from the Patriots' perspective, obviously, you laid out the big problem here, which is that they have a major conundrum at the two most important positions on the roster in quarterback and head coach. And this is not a new thing for the Patriots. I mean, I was talking with someone about this yesterday in the league. They've drafted their first-round picks have really struggled the past few years. You could say they haven't had a successful first-round pick since gosh, I don't know, 2014, 2013?
You look back and it's like, that's why Brady left, is they can't draft.
Oh, sure. I mean, like, that's a bad thing. But the thing is, we have 25-ish years of Belichick drafting, where some of it was with Scott Pioli, some of it was with Nick Caserio, some of it was on his own. I don't know that he can't draft. I know he's had some bad first-round picks, and that is usually a good sign that you can't draft, but I've also seen him make a lot of good picks in years past. Like you don't get a big enough sample on GMs to really get a strong idea of what they can do. Belichick's one of the few guys where we can say, yes, he has. And I think about maybe John Schneider in Seattle, where remember how bad their first-round picks were for a while, where I remember when the Jamal Adams trade happened, Seahawks fans were like, listen, you don't understand. Like, we're gonna mess up our first round picks anyway. Let's just trade them for Jamal Adams because we know he's good. And then John Schneider had like the best draft in football last year when he got a first round pick that was not in the 20s. So are we going to say Bill Belichick, if they land a top five pick, is he gonna screw it up, you think?
Well, I think the problem is twofold. It's that Bill Belichick, first of all, when we talk about the draft, it's draft and develop, right? Like, yes. Nobody's a finished product at 21. Like, your job is also to develop them. And I think the problem is Belichick is in charge of drafting players, running the team, but then also coaching the players and developing them. But there's also this third thing we never talk about. I had the opportunity to talk to Bill Cowher this season. Sure. And someone asked him about coaching players, and he stopped them. He's like, I don't coach players. I coach coaches. I think that's actually the biggest problem the Patriots have, is Belichick has completely lost interest in coaching coaches and teaching them. Like Danny Kelly, who I host the show with, and I think he's been on the show with you before. Danny Kelly jokes about when you get older, you just don't want to talk to people anymore. And Belichick, like, he keeps bringing back Joe Judge and Patricia and all these people because he just doesn't want to deal with people anymore. So he doesn't have the energy to coach coaches. And then, you know, half a quarter of the defensive staff is just his children. And so I look and I'm like, no wonder they can't develop the players, because there's this cascading system on both sides. I feel like Belichick stopped developing a scouting system to find people and the coaching development aspect. So both these prongs are broken. And when you're out of touch enough that Matt Patricia will be put in charge of your defense. And look, maybe he did better than we thought, given how the offense is doing this year. But the fact that even that was considered, I think, to answer your question, it's not a good situation for a quarterback if it was ever thought that someone who's never called offense should develop Mac Jones. But it's just, there's not much to put in stock that this will go well.
But couldn't you say that the Patriots defense has been very good the past few years? Like, admittedly, given that there's multiple Belichick sires on the staff, there's some questions about whether they are getting the most cutting edge stuff, but like, the defense has been good for the past few years. It's not good this year, but they also lost their star first round pick at cornerback Christian Gonzalez, who was awesome before his injury, and Matt Judon, their best pass rusher, their best front seven player, in the same game in September. Like, the Bills defense hasn't been great since they lost Matt Milano and Tre'Davious White. I'm not going to say Sean McDermott should get fired because of that, because they have a quarterback in place. I think, to me, it feels like if you go to Bill Belichick and say, hey, listen, you have to bring in someone from the outside to refresh this offense. Like, the ideas you have are not getting where they need to get. You need to cede some control of personnel. We still think you're a good coach. We still think you can coach defense. But we need you to give up some of your control. Maybe he'll say, screw you, I'm out of here. But if he doesn't, I still feel like he's a better coach than the next person you're likely to hire.
So you're saying that the most cynical version you could say about Belichick is he's probably an elite defensive coach that was totally propped up the Patriot way, propped up by just great Brady excellence. But if the Patriots fall face first into Drake May or Caleb Williams,
which they're kind of doing,
that might be enough for them to just be back in a wild card like as soon as next year.
Yes,
that's fair. That's a fair argument.
Yes, that's my concern about putting the Patriots so high here, and the Giants. I mean, it's different, right? Like I understand believing in Dable, but they do have a quarterback making $41 million next year who is now out for the year with a torn ACL, who was terrible when he was healthy, who has been injured.
Is that bad?
Every single year besides last year. It's not good. And I think it's frustrating because it's not as if this was not obvious to anyone who was not wearing a blue jersey for most of the offseason. I mean, the Giants, I don't think they're naive to this, right? Like, weren't they at the USC game, the USC-Washington game last weekend?
Yeah.
So I think that tells you they've recognized we made a huge mistake and we're going to be open to taking a quarterback if we fall that far. But this isn't a team that's even in good cap shape. Like, next year, their cap's going to be a mess. It's not even like they can go out and bring in 10 players to upgrade this roster. Like, they are in a messy, sticky situation, partly because of what Dave Gettleman did, but partly because they committed to the roster they had last year and sort of believed that they were onto something when they were not a good team last year and they're a terrible team this year.
Yeah, if the Giants end up with the top two pick this year, sometimes, what's the phrase? You know, sometimes you shoot yourself in the foot, miss, and accidentally you can strike oil. Like, I think that Giants.
Wait, what?
I don't know.
Is that how you try to find oil? You just shoot the ground until you find oil?
I think so. I'm not a scientist. I don't know. But the point being, I think that they're not obviously in a bad cap situation. I think there's a world that they just are going to eat like way more of Daniel Jones's cap money next year than they ever wanted to do and move on after 2025. I think they take a quarterback. He's the nominal starter entering 2024 and they transition at some point and then they, you know, sayonara. But I think the thing that these two teams have in common, the Giants Patriots, is I think you also have to factor in divisional politics a little bit. Like,
sure.
I mean, I think the Giants was very clarifying, very humbling. And a lot of people were like, oh, I won an Oscar. I'm so humble. Like, that's the opposite of being humble.
A lot of people say, I won an Oscar. I'm so humble.
Well, no, I'd say a lot of people use humbling wrong. What was actually humbling is being a Giants fan. I'm a Giants fan. Watching Giants Raiders side by side with Eagles Cowboys. Mm-hmm. And I just kept looking back and forth like, we're supposed to beat them? Like, the Giants can't beat the Eagles. The Giants couldn't even run the Philly special on Sunday. They can't even run trick plays.
To be fair, they did run the Philly special better than the Rams, who at least caught the pass, but injured Matthew Stafford's thumb in the process and knocked him out for a game.
Well, the Giants already knocked out two quarterbacks, so.
That's true, but not doing trick plays, Danny. Show their trick play formula some respect. I understand the argument of, like, Dable was a good coach last year with the personnel he had, and he was. Like, I don't think he suddenly forgot how to coach. But suddenly this feels like it's a major, major step up. I mean, even if you get Drake May or Caleb Williams, which we're going to talk about for a lot of these teams in our top five, I believe, like, you still need to add two starting receivers if you think Jalin Hyatt's good. Your tight end is 32 years old next year and can't stay healthy. Your running back is a free agent. Your offensive line has one very good player and four big question marks, like that Jets play I tweeted out from Monday night, where it's just the receivers running four question mark routes, one of whom is a top 10 pick who insulted the fan base. So, and then the defense, Dexter Lawrence is awesome. Kayvon Thibodeau is really good. They feel like a weird fit. Like they feel like they should be a team that rushes four and gets after the quarterback that way, and they have a defensive coordinator who just wants to blitz his brain out. So
yeah. I think you're totally right. So again, I should have said this at the top, but the way I did this whole exercise was I really just looked at two lenses. I looked at this through, who would you pick if this was a Madden simulation? Like, who would you pick? What do they have, right? Who are the good players? Who are the players in the 90s? And then what's the quarterback situation, right? And then cap, and then obviously draft picks.
That's a good way to do it.
But then the other lens, I was like, okay, but it's not who's running the team. And I think that the tiebreaker for me is, like, I don't know who's going to be running the Patriots next year. I think you're right. I think it's fair to say that if the Patriots get that top two pick, you're probably right. I think you've changed my mind. I actually probably should have put the Panthers number one. And that I think the Giants, it's similar. It's if they get Caleb Williams or Drake May. I think what's concerning me is exactly what you just said, is if you don't get the top two pick for Giants or Patriots, they're in the same boat. Who do they have to catch the ball? Both the Giants and Patriots have, like, one good lineman. Andrew Thomas is how many players they have under 30? And I look at the Giants, and if they don't get that top two pick, and you either have to rely on, like, Bo Nix, who, again, most quarterbacks fail. It's like, you really should be assuming they're going to be bad and hope that they're good. And if the Giants don't, and they have to trade up, which is really what you're saying, where the Panthers are, how are the Giants going to acquire a single solid receiver under 30 years old? Never mind, the best case for Evan Neal is they have to move him from right tackle to right guard. So how do the Giants get that player, especially if you have to give up the capital to move up? So that's the concern, and I think that there's only two Drake Mays and Caleb Williams, and whoever doesn't get them, like, it's in their own tier.
The good thing for the Giants is that they are well-positioned to be stinking for the rest of the year and tank for Caleb and Drake Williams.
Tommy DeVito.
It's going to be Tommy DeVito and Matt Barkley for the next few weeks.
Thunderpants! What are you laughing at?
Laffy Taffy. They have a funny joke on every wrapper, and I love how fruity they are. Banana's my favorite. Want one?
Sure. Mmm, so smooth and creamy.
I like to eat them after school and after dinner and after...
Whenever you need a good LOL?
Yeah. So, here's the joke. What do clouds wear under their shorts?
Thunderpants. That is good. Laffy Taffy. Deliciously funny. Head to LaffyTaffy.com to shop now.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Let's talk about the Panthers, my number one pick. You feel like they should be high up there as well, I think. This is sort of, they're not going to get Caleb Williams or Drake May. They don't have a path to that because they traded their first round pick to the Bears, who might end up getting Caleb Williams or Drake May. I'm not factoring that frustration into this, but I am saying you have no first round pick next year, so you can't add another super talented player to your roster. They have, let's go through the roster quickly. Question marks at running back, where Miles Sanders hasn't worked out. Question marks at receiver, where their only passable receiver this year has been Adam Thielen, who's been good somehow, miraculously, but who is in his mid-30s. Hayden Hurst, their starting tight end, has fallen out of the starting role after they added him in free agency. Their offensive line, supposed to be good, has not been good. Ike Ekwonu, who was their first-round pick last year, was struggling as a rookie, has been bad this year in pass protection, has not been great. On defense, they have a couple of super talented players. Unfortunately, Shaq Thompson's out for the year. J.C. Horn has missed significant time each of his first three seasons. And Brian Burns is a pending free agent. You're about to franchise him. You don't have him under contract next year. So there's talent on this roster to a greater extent than the Patriots and the Giants. But Bryce Young has not looked great. And if Bryce Young is bad, like... you might get fired before, if you were to take this job tomorrow, you might get fired before you have the chance to take the next guy. That might be 3 years from now.
Honestly, Bill, you changed my mind. Maybe I'm bad at takes and content because maybe I'm not supposed to say that. But like, you changed my mind because I'm realizing that the Panthers are at where I was saying the Patriots would be if things went wrong. And because I actually think Bryce Young still might be good.
I do too, to be clear.
The problem is that the offense has been so bad that if Bryce Young is good, then clearly the coaching and the roster or both are a huge problem. And the Panthers have just once. I feel like the theme of the David Tepper era owning the Panthers is just huge investments with questionable returns. And I mean, the players, coaches, Matt Rhule, $60 million deal, the practice facility. They got how far and how much money, like, 7-8 figures in a building a practice facility. They just bailed. Like, nothing they've invested in has really yielded any kind of dividend. And so Bryce Young, it's like, even let's say he's good. I feel like Frank Reich has already raised huge questions in the coaching staff. But then if you bring in another coach, you're just starting Bryce Young clock over. But the I look at this roster and I'm kind of like, it's the Arrested Development dead dove do not eat. Like, what did they expect? It's like the trading away DJ Moore. In that trade to get Bryce Young, turning down Brian Burns, and at this point they've been offered, what, 4 first-round picks in 365-day span for Burns they turned down?
I believe so.
And then they're like, it was like a caricature. They're like, yeah, now we need a receiver. It's like, well, yeah, why did you give away DJ Moore? So I see what you're saying, where this is the hardest one to believe. I probably overrated that they're in the NFC South, and I feel like any team can win the NFC South with an offseason. But you're right that it's really – I mean, the fact that they don't have a first and – they're down a second next year too, aren't they?
I believe so.
I mean, that's pretty bad when you feel like you missed at left tackle.
Yeah.
There's just not much hope. Like, the fact that their third best player in a couple of years might be J.C. Horn, who, as you said, has played 17 games in 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not ideal. The NFC South thing is interesting because I could make a case for three different teams from the NFC South being on this list. I do have another one as my number two, which is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, where they're mired in the mediocrity of the middle class of the NFL. They have an expensive roster. They're not even like saving money. They're expensive. They're $47 million over next year's cap with Mike Evans, Devontae White, or sorry, Lavonte David, excuse me, Devin White, Greg Gaines, and Antoine Winfield Jr., all free agents. They have nothing at quarterback, but they have Baker Mayfield, who looked good last week, to be fair, did produce last week, but Baker is Baker. I don't think you want to be building around Baker. Kyle Trask is there as well. They have no running game. I mean, like, they're good enough, and they're playing in a division that's bad enough that we know they have no shot at those top two quarterbacks. And so they're going to take Bo Nix or someone in the middle of the first round, probably, with good wide receivers, but no running game, an up and down offensive line, a defense that's going to be missing a bunch of starters from this year, and it hasn't played that well this year. I mean, Carlton Davis got nuked by the Texans last week in that game. You know, like to me, it feels like they're good enough to be bad. But if we're talking about, like, can you make a run and seriously compete? Like, I don't see a path for that with this roster construction.
This is a well-timed episode, Bill. See how you're good at your job. It's because the Bucks, I think you've done a great job always pointing out how quickly the Rams won a Super Bowl and how quickly all of their defenders except Aaron Donald and Ernest Jones were no longer on the team. Like, I remember you tweeted out like a list of just you crossed out and read all the players. The Bucks are like the opposite. They won the Super Bowl like 3 years ago. Like, eight of these defenders that started are still on this team. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this Sunday, with this Texans game, five touchdowns to a rookie quarterback, was like the unofficial, okay, this defense, we officially don't need to keep these people anymore. I just think it's odd that the Bucks, I think what's weird about them is they have so many good players, but the whole feels so much less than the sum of the parts.
Yes.
In part because they have a very not physical offensive line.
Yes.
And they have, it's like, I was going to say a shell, it's really a husk. It's really like this post-Tom Brady husk. Maybe this is rude, but it kind of just, you ever like buy vegetables and like just leave them in the fridge too long and you're like, I'm not going to, like, yes. I should have eaten that.
Yes.
Like, there actually was way more meat on the bone after Brady left than I think I ever gave the Bucks credit for. Mm-hmm. But they just really never were aggressive enough about having a quarterback.
They forgot. I think that's what it is. I think they just were like, okay, got a to-do list. Okay, we went and refilled the, you know, the cannonballs in the pirate ship. We went out and didn't trade Devin White. Great. Oh, man.
Yeah.
I forgot about Jacoby Brissett. Oh, he's gone already? Oh, okay. Baker was good on national TV last year. Let's go with him, I guess. I don't know. Kyle Trask is probably good. You can't forget about the quarterback. That's the most important part of the mix. Danny, give me your number three after the Patriots.
I had the Panthers at three, okay. But you've actually changed my mind. I will now. I'm going to put Panthers at one, and okay. I think Giants two, Patriots three, because you've made a very compelling Patriots getting a quarterback would pretty immediately make them a playoff team again.
Okay. I guess I'll give you my number three then. I feel like I'm dominating this show. I apologize.
Well, I mean, is that why you brought me on?
Yes, I want. You're a very meek and very thoughtful co-host. I will go with the Denver Broncos in number three. Danny, I tweeted this out last week, a stat called snap weighted age. Kevin Clark used it against me on Around the Horn. And then,
how do you feel about that?
It was probably one of my all-time favorite moments on television to hear Tony Reale criticize Kevin Clark for using this stat, and Kevin immediately capitulate and be like, oh, it was Bill's stat, after I had not been credited for it originally. Just incredible TV. Do you know how old the Broncos roster is, Danny? In terms of where they rank in the NFL?
I don't know. They probably ancient Sumerian.
Ancient Sumerian. Russell Wilson's contract is on stone tablets. Yes, that is true. They are the third oldest roster in the National Football League. The Saints are one. I forget who's number two, but the Broncos are number three. So you have an old roster to begin. You have a roster that I think it's fair to say has some holes. This has not been the prettiest roster in football this season. They have played better the past few weeks, to be fair. But this is a team that is missing so many first round picks from the Russell Wilson and Sean Payton trades, and understand why they did them. I'm not trying to relitigate those trades. I was all for the Russell Wilson trade. It has not worked out, even though Russ has been better this year. We'll see what happens with the Sean Payton trade. But I'm only saying that to say at the end of the day, like, they're going to feel the effects of not having three or four first-round picks from those deals for years to come, because there's going to be holes in their roster they're going to have to fill because they did not have those solutions, and Russ might not be around to make up for it. They probably would consider taking a quarterback in the first round this year if, or early in the draft this year, if one Sean Payton likes is aware. So you add all that to the factor you consider that I do not consider frequently enough, and I think you're very right to consider this. They play in a division with Patrick Mahomes and Justin Herbert, which is bad for your chances of winning a Super Bowl. So they have a coach who I think is good. They have some talent, no question, but are the Broncos hopeless?
I mean, I think maybe. I think that everything you laid out, I also think the Broncos are four, and I think that you laid it out really well. The thing I would add on top of what you're saying is that not only do they have no picks to make them younger, but they spent their money in free agency. Never mind the fact that it cost them, aside from all the picks they spent to get Russell Wilson, what, two first, 2 seconds for Russ, mm-hmm. plus a smattering of players, another first, second for Peyton. Then also $250 million guaranteed get Russ and Peyton. On top of that, all the other free agents they signed. And here's the problem. Historically, as I learned reading your columns for 12 years, it's a bad idea probably to spend a bunch of money in free agency, because free agency is mostly composed of players that nobody else wanted. They saw them every day for 4 years and didn't want to keep them. Mm-hmm. But the problem is you actually usually do get a bump in that first year. Every year you see this. Giants in 2016 had a huge mm-hmm. bump. You know, even the Jaguars, like, you sign those free agents, you get that first year bump, then the decline. The Broncos haven't even gotten the bump they wanted to see from the spending. And as a very great stat that I personally pulled myself, quote, quarterback Russell Wilson has had 5 games in his career with fewer than 120 yards passing, and 2 of those have come in the Broncos' past 3 games.
Oh, no. Who was that stat from, Danny?
That stat was, did you like it or not?
I liked it.
Okay, it was my stat. Okay, that good. I got under my pen name, Bill Barnwell, say? ESPN staff writer.
You're right. I mean, I think that's a really good point. They've already invested a lot in free agency, and those picks have been pretty bad so far. I don't know if Mike McGlinchey is really the best right tackle in football.
Can I give you my take on the Broncos?
Please.
I think that, you know how, like, sometimes people in life, you know, sometimes you crave the opposite, right? Sometimes people get out of a relationship, date the opposite person. Sometimes you drive a car your whole life, you want the opposite car. The Broncos ownership is the Walmart family. And their whole life, what are they doing? Like, you know, the everyday low price. Like, they're just, like, thin margins. And they came in and they got an NFL team. And I think they wanted to spend the most money possible after a lifetime of accruing billions of dollars on, like, percentages of cents. And then they just, like, were so excited to spend $200 million in one go that they really just got out over their skis.
Yeah. So what do you think they should have done? They should have hired David Culley as their head coach.
Well, I don't know. Ironically, they were the people of all people to have the training to. What do we say? Every NFL owner comes in and just, they think they can do it. They make huge swings. And I kind of was like, I wonder if the Walmart people will just get it, that that's not a good idea. And actually, they were more excited to do it than anyone. Wow. Like, they should. I thought they were going to incremental. Let's keep our money. Like, don't give away stuff. Like, you know, I thought they would understand intrinsically that was a good idea. But I guess they didn't learn much from inheriting the $70 billion.
Well, you have two of the newest ownership groups in this list, which also seems like it may be related to not having a great infrastructure to succeed, Danny. I feel like I'm not going to keep going naming teams. I have a couple more. Give me your number 5. I want to hear who your number 5 is.
All right. I'm between 2 teams, and I want you to talk me through what I should have. I'm between the Raiders, who had a fun game beating the Giants, but ultimately going to have to flip Devontae, and we'll see if he wants to stay. They have Devontae Adams, Max Crosby, a solid left side of the offensive line, and nothing else. And I kind of just put the Bears anyway. I know that they have 2 first-round picks. They might get the first pick, but I'm like, you know what? They had the Bears invented the quarterback position 80 years ago, and they haven't had one since. And, like, honestly, I think so much of success is top-down. Sure. The Bears ownership, in my mind, seems to be a little more focused on getting the rights to build a stadium to, and then they can just sell the team after I feel like the Seahawks are the next team to be sold, and then Chicago. And, like, call me crazy, I feel like you can't really believe you're going to win a Super Bowl until the people who own the team are thinking about, how do we win a Super Bowl, and not, how do we cash out for, like, $6 billion? Like, that's bad. on top of the fact that they've never developed it, they keep lighting second round picks on fire. I don't know. They're going to have a new coach, because the flip side is, what if they just hire Jim Harbaugh and get Caleb Williams? Like, they might be the best team.
What if
so
they
I know
just
that's
hire
dumb.
Lincoln Riley and get Caleb Williams? Like, that's not so out of their own possibility either.
So the right answer here is probably the Raiders, right?
The Raiders are my number four pick, so we were on the same page here.
I think that makes sense. Max Crosby in my head's 30. The fact that he's 26.
He's 27. 26, he's so good.
It's crazy. Like, I mean, should the Raiders keep him, or should the Raiders realistically try to flip Devontae and him for like four first-round picks and just start anew?
I don't think they're going to get four first-round picks for those two players. I think they'll get two for Max Crosby. I wrote about this in my column, which was free on ESPN last week about Josh McDaniels.
I think it was my
firing.
Column.
It was in your... Oh, sorry. It was a Danny Heifetz column. I was up at 3 in the morning writing it, and you texted me and said, Bill, if you don't put my name in this column, I'm going to come for you. And that's fair. I understand that. So your name is on it in some jurisdictions, not in Massachusetts, though. I will say that I think they get two first-round picks for Max Crosby. I think they almost have to, because they're a few years away from competing. Again, we talked about the divisional factors here with Mahomes and Herbert, who are not going away, but you hope that maybe their rosters are a little more compromised in a few years. You build the right way. You have years of missing first-round picks that you need to replace, who have been either bad or traded or had trouble off the field or not been healthy. I mean, I don't think you get a one for Adams. I don't know. Maybe you do. Maybe you're a team that just, like the Jets, want to give up a first-round pick for Devontae Adams. That's not crazy by any means, but I think you get two for Crosby, and I think you just have to start over. I just think you have to try and rack up as many picks as possible and just be like very patient for 3 years and hope that in year four you're good. They're not going to be bad enough. I don't think they'll be bad enough to get one of the top two quarterbacks. Whew. But it is not a pretty situation for the Raiders. They're the fifth oldest team in football this year, by the way.
Yeah, I love that snap-adjusted stuff you have. And so Crosby, I'm curious, you think, again, this great stat I wrote this week. Crosby leads the NFL with 40 pressures through nine games.
That's true.
Serving as the only pass rusher of note on a defense which nobody else had more than one sack all season before Sunday.
And Giants came to town.
Yeah, it's such a good defensive player of the year race. And part of me is like, if you actually have this guy that's so productive, who else are they going to pay? Is it worth flipping? What are the odds that those two first-round picks produce anyone worth Crosby? It's like, if they don't have much young talent, do you just have to have the ammo, because ultimately you need to get a quarterback and Aiden O'Connell's not the guy?
I think so. The only thing I would say is that, like, let's say you keep Crosby. Okay, he has 3 years left in his deal. He's been so good, you probably are negotiating next year. Like, what are you paying him for the next 3 years? In the time, by the time you're going to be good, he's 30, or he's 29 turning 30. He's still going to be a good player then, probably, but he's going to be past his peak, probably going to be more expensive. Like, you know, will those two first-round picks turn into the next Max Crosby? Probably not, but they'll be a lot cheaper. And frankly, I think you owe it to Max Crosby. Don't waste the next 3 years of your life, you know, hoping to smoke cigars in the locker room three times a year, because our team's going to be terrible.
Do you believe in any way, do you believe in any aspect of you probably want one great player for the purpose of culture and setting a standard, or do you think that's overrated? Like, would you rather, like, if you up close and personal were like, wow, Max Crosby actually changes or like raises the bar for the work ethic of all the players around him, does that mean anything to you, or does it still be like, or significantly mean anything where you might keep him, a la the Panthers keeping Brian Burns, which I don't know if that's why they did it, but would that change it for you, or you're like, no, you got to get the first rounders anyway?
I mean, it sounds great in theory. I can certainly see the argument, but the point I'm going to make in response is Joe Thomas and the Browns.
I was going to bring it up, and I was like, that would kind of end the argument.
And like, not saying that they were bad because of Joe Thomas, because obviously that's not the case. They got better after Joe Thomas left because Joe Thomas left, because that's not fair. But one had nothing to do with the other, which is unfair to Joe Thomas, who's one of the greatest offensive linemen of all time. But just like, you have coaches like, and like, if they trade Max Crosby, Antonio Pierce can still be like, hey, this is what the standard is. So I think you're better off having young talent than trying to have a great player set the standard there. But I could see the argument for sure. I have one more team left on my list, Danny. So you have the Raiders officially at five?
Yeah, I think so, just because there's so much wrong. And again, Mark Davis, they can't draft well. They don't hire well. And Mark Davis is living in his own reality, and they don't have a quarterback.
I have one more team on this list, and I feel good about it. But I do think when I say them, you might be shocked. Does that give you any hint as to who it might be?
Is it the Jets?
It's not the Jets, although that would be not far off. The Jets, the defense is too good. They have too
much
talent.
That's what I thought, yeah.
Like, if they can get a competent quarterback, they will be fine. And they'll have a competent quarterback next year. He won't be the guy they are hoping for, but he'll be fine. I have the Pittsburgh Steelers at number 5.
Wow.
I told you you were going to be surprised. Let me lay out the case for the Pittsburgh Steelers, who have an incredible coach in Mike Tomlin. I think we can both agree, correct?
Of course.
This is a team that has negative $5 million in cap space next year. So not a ton of money to work with in adding talent. They have the oldest defense in all of football. Defense playing well, but their best players, Cameron Hayward, 34, TJ Watt, 29, Micah Fitzpatrick's younger. They have a couple of younger pieces, Alex Highsmith, Keanu Benton's been really exciting this year, but this is a very old secondary and a front seven that is full of veterans as opposed to younger talent. I know this perception of the Steelers is that they are a drafting and developing team. They have gotten away from that. According to Jason Fitzgerald from Over the Cap, I believe they have one of the lowest rates of homegrown talent, which would have been shocking to me 20 or 30 years ago. They have one of the youngest offenses in all of football, Danny. But you host a fantasy football show.
I do. The Ringers podcast. I should have mentioned that at some point. Yeah,
you will at the end. But what do you think of the Steelers' offense?
Oh, I try not to.
It's a mess. They have a mediocre to bad offensive line. I forget where Brandon Thorne had them in his rankings that established the run, but I think they were bottom five up front. They have a couple of exciting receivers in George Pickens and Pat Freiermuth, who struggled to stay healthy, and Deontay Johnson. But oh boy, the other spots. Najee Harris has been terrible as a first draft pick. And Kenny Pickett, the guy who I was getting angry tweets about when I suggested that he was not good based on 6 passes in the preseason. Kenny Pickett has been abysmal in his second season, Danny.
So when the Steelers drafted Kenny Pickett, I was like, this is just falling in love with the boy next door. Mm-hmm. Because they were like, oh, yeah, like, we just took the guy, you know, they share the facility, University of Pittsburgh and Steelers. I'm like, that's like a bad sign. Like, that's a bad sign when you're like, you just fall. It's like you proposed to like the first girl you ever saw. That's basically what they did.
Wow.
And I will say, so my girlfriend's from Pittsburgh.
Yes.
And I go there a lot. Pittsburgh, Chicago people claim this, but if Chicago's the biggest small town in America, Pittsburgh's the second biggest small town.
Okay.
It's like, with pride, people from Pittsburgh are like, yeah, it's like a borderline cult. Like, I'm not kidding you. It was a huge factor that Kenny Pickett went to Pitt and was like, mm-hmm, this local guy. But even so, I say that with, it is incredibly bad sign that Steelers fans have already given up on this dude. My question for you is that there's so much blame being foisted upon Matt Canada, where, you know, they haven't had 400 yards in God knows how long. I don't know, since World War II or something.
It's nice that the soldiers came back from the war and the Steelers welcomed them with a 400-yard
game. Yeah, no, it's crazy. Like, we built, and then America built and deconstructed the entire global order in the time that the Steelers have had 400 yards. But
I didn't realize we were getting to this on this podcast.
Well, we didn't have to. I wasn't where I was going. But the Steelers' offense to me is like, it honestly reminds me almost of like a bad version of Eli Manning. In the middle of his career, where it's like they can't do anything for 55 minutes. And then, because they're so, like, the Steelers are so, Mike Tomlin, they're so afraid of, for 55 minutes, it's like, don't make a mistake. Don't do anything dangerous. And then they're like, oh, we have to go win the game. Go do something. And then they just, and the up-tempo, hurry-up offense actually unlocks. And they're like, all right, I guess we can move the football now. Mm-hmm. My question to you is, for all the blame on Matt Canada, it's so odd to me. It's like, as if Mike Tomlin isn't Matt Canada's boss and also in charge of the offense.
Yes.
And while Mike Tomlin deserves a tremendous amount of credit for being, you know, never having a losing record, which is almost impossible in the NFL, doesn't Mike Tomlin deserve a pretty hefty amount of blame for something that is literally his job, which is to oversee the offense too? And like, how much of this do you think is Tomlin's defensive coordinator core identity of, like, if the offense doesn't make a mistake, we'll win the turnover margin and the defense will win the game.
This did come up. I gave Tomlin coach of the year in my midseason rank. Sorry, Danny's midseason.
That's so weird. I did the same thing. It's so weird.
He was my coach of the year, and I did get a lot of negative feedback. People were like, hey, this guy hired Matt Canada. He deserves the blame for that. Someone even threw me a B better, which is when you know someone has decided to cause trouble. And that's a fair criticism. I don't know that it changes my feelings about how good Tomlin has been this year, but in terms of the big picture for the Steelers, it absolutely does make sense. And this has been a team that, you know, since they moved on from Bruce Arians, who was retired, quote unquote, and then took like 8 other jobs after being retired, they have not really stuck the landing at OC. And Mike Tomlin's been the head coach that entire time. So I think you can make a fair case that, you know, he does take some culpability for the offensive infrastructure and decision making. Do you think, trying to think of OCs that might be available this year, like, let's say they hire, I don't know, Matt LaFleur, or it's not Matt LaFleur, the other LaFleur.
Mike
LaFleur. They could have more different names than Matt and Mike. Come on, guys. Mike LaFleur as OC. They hire someone who we think is probably a competent OC. Do you think that fixes Kenny Pickett?
No, you beat me to the punch. I think the thing that has frustrated me is, you know, I had this question about the Ravens, and to some extent I've been proven wrong, but I'm always fascinated when there's only so much you can put at the coordinator's feet. Like, I put a lot of blame on Jason Garrett for the Giants because I'm like, he was hired because he was the most experienced person. He was hired to do the offense. But most of the time when I'm looking at John Harbaugh, with his offense coordinator is Greg Roman. Greg Roman got a lot of criticism. I'm like, well, John Harbaugh's like the boss. Like, it's John Harbaugh's not thinking about this all day and dictating it. Like, it's like Greg Roman is like some like fiefdom that can't be reined in by the Roman Empire. It's like, you know, it's like Matt Canada is not the barbarians at the gate that can't, like, he's an employee. We never talk about this enough. Quarterbacks do what their coordinator tells them, and the coordinator's at the behalf of the coach. And so I'm just like, I don't know. I'm always skeptical that Matt Canada maybe is perhaps underqualified, but also the overall strategy is dictated by Mike Tomlin. And so I'm dubious that they would hire anyone with really different ideas, and that if they brought someone in, that they wouldn't be largely maybe different results slightly, but like it's still part of this broader vision of, yeah, we can get out yardage and still win the game. It's fine. Like, they don't want to. It's like what Mike McCarthy said of the Cowboys. He's like, we don't need to get all these points and yards, but like, coaches believe that, man. Coaches believe that all the time. So I think that the overall direction is set. But to your point, that's dangerous when the defense is really old and you are relying on these engines of Cam Hayward and TJ Watt playing at basically a defensive player of the year level. And if those things fall, then everything else could fall real quick.
Did you say out yardaged?
I did. I was just kind of going on the fly. Here's my take with words. If you know what I mean, it's a word. Like, no one heard me say out yardaged and was like, what does that mean? You know what I mean? They're like, maybe he's dumb. He speaks for a living. He should probably like know words. But I'm like, but if you knew what I meant, isn't that a word?
I would love a podcast that's just called Here's My Take with Words. Here's my word take.
People are like, watching the Chiefs is funner than the Giants. And people are like, funner's not a word. I'm like, but you knew what it meant. They're all made up. The words are just sounds that we know what they mean.
Danny pulls out the all dogs are adopted argument.
Never heard that one. That's funny. Well, no, I mean, I never thought about that.
Wow. Food for thought as we finish up here. Okay, so give me your top five to finish up here, Danny. I know we went through some back and forth. Where did you land on your bottom five teams here? Top five is the wrong word.
Panthers tier of their own at number one because they are the what could go wrong if you trade up for quarterback and also maybe hire the wrong coach. Then I have Giants and the Patriots where if they get the quarterback, they're good. And if they don't, they're probably a disaster zone. Then we've got these teams that are mostly like stuck in quarterback purgatory.
Yep.
Where I agree with you, Broncos, Bucks, Raiders. And I think you could tweak with the order for various reasons.
Yeah, I don't think the order is the important thing. I think it's just if you're in consideration for being at the bottom here, so many things have to go right for you to feel like you're going to end up in the right situation.
Yeah. I will put Broncos Raiders actually 4 or 5 because they have to compete with Mahomes and Herbert, whereas the Bucks at the end of the day, the Saints are in this weird cap situation forever that will end eventually. And then the Panthers, we're saying, are number one. So that to me is the Bucks are just competing with the Falcons. So I make that the tiebreaker and take them out of the top five.
The Saints are in this weird cap situation. They're just loaning.
Well, sorry, I meant to say, what's the technical term? Money laundering scheme.
Money laundering scheme. Fair. It's a fair way to put it, Danny. Don't let Saints fans hear that, though. They know what they're doing. They're just so much smarter than everyone else when it comes
to it. Look, when I take $400 out at 3 a.m. on Bourbon Street, like, I also know what I'm doing. I'm sacrificing tomorrow for today, and I'm going to try to stay awake as long as possible. And that's what the Saints are doing.
That's a very good way to put it, Danny. That's I may have to use that in your column next week. But until then, until we can share a byline together and just enjoy the glory days of the NFL, Danny, where can people check out all the work you do?
Ringer Fantasy Football Show, baby. Anywhere you get podcasts, but get them on Spotify.
I would love if it was called the Ringer Fantasy Football Podcast, baby. That would be such a good name. Danny. It's a blast. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Bill.
Thanks so much to Danny Heifetz of The Ringer. You can tell Danny is a friend of mine. Love talking about football with Danny off the air. Love talking about it with him on this podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. We have more audio coming next week on The Bill Barnwell Show. Plenty of stuff to get to as we approach Thanksgiving. We approach the second half. We're officially in the second half now of the NFL season. Shocking to me. We've already played half a football season, but hope you guys enjoyed the show. Hope we didn't upset you too much if you're one of the teams we mentioned, but more audio coming next week.